Rumors spreading round in that Wisco town that the ice is gonna melt soon. You know what I'm talking about? Just let me know if you wanna go. Take a shot at catching muskie. They got a lot of nice fish.
Joins us live in Rhinelander to explain what happened. Christopher?
That's right, Jessica. I'm outside the Oneida County Courthouse where Alan James Murray was in the court facing felony charges by using a Menards rebate card that was valued around $300 without any consent. According to the criminal complaint, Murray said he found what he thought was an abandoned Menards rebate card and an Eagle River recycling dumpster and only used it once. The owner of the card said she never received her card after ordering it in the mail and later saw it was redeemed at the Rhinelander Menards. Murray told investigators that the card only had around $60. After more investigations, they found that there was over $350 of charges on the card, indicating that Murray was untruthful with authorities. After further investigation, they found that the card was used by the defendant in three separate transactions at the Rhinelander Menards. The court found that there was a reason to continue and have scheduled an arraignment February 26th. We will keep you updated after the next court date. For now, reporting in Rhinelander, Christopher Bouchon, Newswatch 12.
All right, folks, welcome to the Muskie 360 podcast. Jay, that guy, and oh, man, that's breaking news from the Northwoods.
It is. I mean, it's all about save big money at Menards, isn't it, really, if you think about it?
Really, what a sick son of, oh, man. You think the crime rate in Chicago was bad. This son of a gun's runner, he's got a Menards rebate card, folks.
Yeah, he found the dumpster card of destiny is what he did.
The dumpster card of destiny.
A jackpot, baby. You know, Steve.
We'll be watching this intently.
So yes, Jay. We'll have updates.
Jay texts me. The last time I was up, I don't know if I talked about it on the podcast, when we were broadcasting this summer live from Jay's house, we flip on the news and it's all local kids learn the joys of art by painting rocks. And it's just the dumbest thing I've ever seen. So
yeah,
I love the local news up there. But this sick son of a has got a Menards rebate card. He's down there buying pants. He's down there buying light fixtures. And the poor newscaster boy, is he like fresh off at, like, did he graduate from newsman school yesterday?
I don't know him. He's new. He's new.
I can tell you that much. I'm not, as someone that's been on TV, he's new. Not making fun of him, but Oh, man. Talk about just cracking. Much less.
Well, it's the leadoff story. This is hard-hitting journalism here.
Yep. And then the poor guy, we got an arrangement. It's an arraignment, whatever. Oh, I felt bad for him.
Did you notice that the guy's got three names, too? I mean, it's just like Lee Harvey Oswald. You see the connection there?
Yeah, I do. Uh-huh. It's creepy. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you what, folks. Watch your wheelbarrows and watch your Menards card. There's a scourge happening in the Northwoods. If you got a Menards rebate card, don't leave it in the dumpster and expect people not to spend it.
Good advice.
Lesson learned. It was the Northwoods breaking Northwoods news.
It's good stuff.
Hey, you know, it beats hearing more about some more Smitty murders. You know, it's
hey, the night is young. As we speak, they're probably driving back from the Milwaukee show. So
they are freaking. We'll have to check the numbers in Milwaukee. It got dice.
WGN tomorrow morning.
Double GN freaking. The Tracer Tail Death Clan. Anyway, Jake called me from the show. He's dying laughing. Somebody, and bless you, whoever did, went up and asked if they had any of the Smitty epoxy rags for sale. Wow. So whoever did that, I commend you. Jake was taken aback and was laughing. And, you know, I mean, maybe next year he'll just keep like a little wash bucket under the thing with some, you know, ether-soaked rags for everybody to walk around. You know, they've stitched Smitty Bait Company on them. And you just grab that thing and waterboard yourself like Guantanamo Bay, right?
Yeah.
You're going to see the astral plane, my man.
Did he say anything? Was he selling those, what do you call them, those shanking blades? Those custom made with the...
We went down to the last time I was at the Smitty's little laboratory there. Mm-hmm. We just laid in the floor and put those over our faces, right?
Mm-hmm.
I saw the void between the void and the space continuum, Jay.
Ooh.
That's how strong that Smitty ether, that the epoxy, you get a little bit of that going on here. Let me tell you. Anyway, man, goofy, wacky weather down south. It is, once again, just some of the craziest stuff. Today I had some guys sort of from the hometown area on the boat. Yet again, it's just like a lot of one and dones, right? Here's the shot. Here's the fish. Here it is. Shellacked. Here he hits, and you go.
Mm-hmm.
It's a matter of you know, you hope you get the hooks, and sometimes they hit them funny, and sometimes they don't hit them hard, which is, it's grindy. And I got this email from Dr. Bob. Dr. Bob's looking, you know, facing open water in Iowa, which has an open season in some areas here pretty soon. You know, hopefully this things will level out. That's going to be interesting to see. It's like, are we going to do the roller coaster all spring? I mean, we are what? I'm looking here at the watch. It is the 18th of February. We're not that far off from March. You know, a lot of people start thinking muskies in March. And, man, it's interesting. So hopefully we get some, not predictability, but some stability, at least where it's not volatility, right? You know, give me anything other than like the roller coaster ride, because you it seems like you sort of get the roller coaster ride back from the fish of, okay, oh, they're shallow, they're deep. You're constantly patterning. And then, you know, if you're fishing down south, you're getting ready to hit open water. It has been the year of patterning. It whatever happened yesterday is probably not happening tomorrow. You know, so stay on your toes, Jay.
Mm-hmm.
The fish are acting wacky, and people are taking Menards cards.
Well, we're looking at a serious northern Wisconsin. We're looking, without question, a very early ice out. I mean, there's not much ice, and I mean, the problem with the ice fishermen right now, they're finding good ice, but they're also finding some open spots just like out of the blue. It's like, what's causing that? It hasn't been that warm lately either. So.
That's weird.
It is what it is. Yeah, ice will go quick, and we're going to have an early ice out season, which will affect fishing in some way, hopefully in a huge positive way. Because the last 2 years have been very late ice out, and you've been up here, and you talked about all, you know, it's all about patterning. It's just like, well, tell me about it.
Yeah,
you know,
you got it.
Last summer, you had to make some adaptations.
Make some assessments. You always have to, but
you always have to.
But when it's goofy, you know, where do you start? And I bring this up just because, you know, my thought process, if it's bad, you better double down. If you know where they're fish, double down and just stick to the game plan, right? Because the bite windows.
Absolutely.
You, when you're dealing with one or two or, you know, minimal contacts, you better be prepared to double down, because if you go meandering off and checking, oh, let's go over here and smell the flowers, you might miss your opportunity. And for people that, you know, you don't have the luxury of being out, say, every day, or you don't know what's happening all week long, if it's feeling slow right now, you know, or if it's not, you're not getting that hot bite going on, you better find them and stick to it, or be confident enough to sort of do your observations, your assessment on bait to figure it out. Jay, I will tell you, last week, we don't do a lot of guests for a lot of reasons, but had Mads on from Savage Gear. Mm-hmm. Had a lot of people email and text, actually Jake Smitty Smith, hey, I can't understand this guy. I went back and re-cleaned up the audio the second day and did my best to get it to work. But just a reminder, we had promised to have him on the show, and he's a great guy to have on the show. But, man, he's calling from China, and he's, what, Swedish? Right? It was tough. So if you had problems. But just to be insulting, right? We don't do very many sponsorships, Jay. We don't?
Oh, okay.
You know, we don't. However, the Smitty Bait Company came through. They wrote a massive check. Now, the check wasn't for a lot of money, but it was one of those big presentation checks, because I guess they keep those at their house.
So, like one of the, was it a huge check to receive? Like one of those big ones, you know?
It's a giant check for a low dollar amount, right?
Oh, okay.
We're you know.
Well, gas for the helicopter.
Well, we're talking two figures here, right? So they come through. We have this. So the Smitties are sponsoring this week.
Okay.
In honor of Mads. No, not the whole show.
Oh.
Ethnic yelling in a foreign language. Here it comes, folks. Brought to you by the Smitty Bay Company.
Hey, fella, fisha kankalayek. We're not going to lure you, okay? Fisha hopper, lure behanger that you been. Klein kankalayek, yeah?
Jay, what did you think the Smitty Bait Company brings ethnic foreign language yelling? I appreciated that. What do you think?
I appreciate it a lot. I think that's an open opportunity for a lot of sponsors to get on the ball game here.
Uh-huh.
Wow. I mean, the door is wide open for some really creative stuff.
If you don't want to hear people talk about fish in a horrible, horrible accent, you know, there you have it. But the Smitties they went all in, right? We're talking
two figures,
boys.
Wow.
You know, after the zeros, dummies, I'm getting rich off this. Keep them coming, Smitties. So anyway, Jay, man, we're coming off the sale. You know, we're feeling our oats here. We got our giant check for two figures. Couple new things, man. Got the next level shades. Still, Krakens are on fire. You got some Bobby baits if you want to get in the Wayback Machine. That's an old school jerk bait, kind of cool. They've gussied those up for the new millennia. I was going to ask you something, Jay. A conversation came up on the boat. We were talking about the Mustad. I was at 3550. The hook that comes on a shallow invader. What hook is that? You know this. That 3-0 gap.
Well, yeah, which they don't make anymore.
Okay, that's what's going to
happen. That was the 3565 BR, if memory serves.
Okay. So it is official. They don't make it anymore. What's going on?
They haven't made that hook in years.
Well, then what's been a dilemma because
Well, probably one of their plasma hooks.
Is it? Is it? Let me see. Is it the wide gap?
Well, they're pretty wide gap. I imagine that's what they're using. They have their own hooks made overseas, and they use that on a lot of their baits. So that's my guess.
We have to take a peek because somebody's saying that hook. Just a thought. We need to find the alternative, because that style of hook is very widely used for a lot of things, and a lot of guys have modded baits with that. So I'll dig in next week. I'll have an answer because I'll have you dig
in. We'll figure that one out. We'll figure it out.
Yeah, because I'm sitting here going, what is this? It doesn't say what it is.
I'll check with my hook assistant, Tommy, at work, DJ Tommy Fresh. I just talked to him a while ago. Yeah, so
find out exactly. Yeah, find out what the model on that hook on the shallow invader is for whatever the
currently.
Because that hook is used, or at least that size and that gapping is used pretty widely. Even that hook, when I was prototyping Titans originally and all this, I was using that hook. I've made quick strikes out of those, so it's a pretty interesting hook. So for the model number, Jay will dig that out of his lofty tome of hook knowledge.
You got her.
I think it's the same hook that's on the 7-inch Phantom too, isn't it? I think something close. Anyway, find me an option in that. Find me an option in that realm. Jay, we're just going to get to it this week. I'm cold, I'm old, and I'm stupid. So we're going to hit the Q&A. Colin, longtime listener, and look forward to the weekly podcast release. Bit of a different question this time. Where is both of your next dream muskie fishing destinations? I'm tracking both Jay and Steve, and he fished many places. They're always very busy traveling. Is there any place you want to cross off your bucket list? Jay, you're exceptionally busy traveling. I believe you made it to the south part of the state of Wisconsin this year so far, right?
Yeah. Well, I'm a world traveler, but not currently.
The world.
But that's
of
the
Wisconsin.
Best way to put it.
Right.
No. The currently is important in
currently,
this factor.
Yeah. What decade? Oh Lord, I'm teasing.
What's yours, Steve? You can't say Wabagoon or Eagle Lake because
been there, done that. I've done them
been
all.
There and done that. Well, I mean, Wabagoon's very interesting to me. I guess I'd put that on the list. That sounds awesome.
I have been very fortunate. So what have I done? I'm trying to think. I've been on Georgian Bay.
Oh, you did?
I've done Georgian Bay, Lake of the Woods. Obviously,
was that like when you were a kid with your dad?
Yeah, I'm in my early 20s.
Okay.
So let's think. I've done Lake of the Woods with Booker. Eagle, I did it for decades and still do it. Wabagoon, I've done Lac Seul, Georgian Bay. I've done the French River. I've been St. Lawrence. I didn't know what was going on. I was a kid when we did the St. Lawrence, but that was, you could check it off. It was a neat experience. Okay. I mean, pretty
That's
much.
That's what I was going to ask.
I'm thinking now because I've caught fish Minnesota, Wisconsin, Illinois, Indiana. I've done. I haven't caught one in Iowa yet, I don't think. I've been there, but I'm trying to think. I have, like, as far as musky stuff. Ottawa River, it's not like bucket list. I'll end up doing it here soon. I've got a buddy that's a guide over there. I'll go do that. But I think, like, in the habitat range of muskies, as is, I think I'm missing because I've caught them on Chautauqua. So I got New York, Pennsylvania. I've caught a fish just about every state that they're there, with the exception, I don't know, Maine has fish. Which I've got a buddy, he's a great podcast listener and pal, that we'll go do that. I'll go hang out with him at some point and do that just to sort of check it off. I think there's like a tiny population in Maryland, which might be a fool's errand. You never heard them coming out of there. But I think I've done just about all the majors. I really do.
What about Vermilion?
Done it. Been there, done
you been
that.
There?
Yeah. Been there, okay. Done that. I've done,
what about Green Bay?
I've been there, done that. I've
no, I might have been on Green Bay. Come on.
I would say at this point, I don't have. I like the question. I've never thought about it. I'll tell you, I'll give up the ghost. There is one thing I want to do that I've never done.
Lake Sweeney.
Sweeney Lake in the Northwoods, folks. You can.
I nailed it.
Two casts, you'll be across it. Right, you might be able to just wade it if you put on hip waders and get side to side. Hell,
he's
no.
Just a little guy.
I've been on Sweeney, baby. You know, I've fished everywhere, man. we have to just do that, Jay. And it's like every lake in the Northwoods. I've been bucket topping Kentucky for just like freaking. Just
I've been everywhere, man, fishing. Sorry.
There's not a musky place that I'm dying to fish. However, I'll give up a secret because nobody's probably dumb enough to do it right now. And it's going to take some financial means and some geopolitical changes before I can go do it. But I will before I die.
Plover.
Is the city of Plover, which will not accept my passport because they...
Oh.
Shut up, Jay. Let me get it out, you moron.
That's right.
So there's in the little Muskie family, our little Esox family, what we consider is chain pickerel, northern pike, tiger muskies, and muskies, right? Let me pull up the old Google box here.
For chain pickerel?
Shut up. You're dumb. Did I say that out loud? Because I felt it in my soul. Anyway. Yeah. So, there's a fish called the Amur pike, okay? The Amur pike is in the Amur River system in East Asia. It is in the same family. It's Esox, right? They are not, it's not anywhere. They can't get them here. There's very little info on them. Very few people have fished for them. So when you think about the Esox family, this is the absolute like last fish, and most people don't realize it exists. Now, what's crazy about this fish, it is kind of a pike muskie on steroids, okay? So they're basically Mongolia and part of Russia, and they get bigger than muskies. But they don't have teeth like a pike or a true muskie. What they have is they have some funky, like, mashy teeth. And so it is weird. It is a weird fish. I'm looking here. There's 120 centimeters, which is we're pushing 50. So you've got Russian guys and people fishing in Mongolia for a fish that gets bigger than muskies, and no one knows how big they get. That's the crazy thing about this fish, is it's so underfished, and it's in such a remote part of the world with hardly anyone targeting them, that how on earth would you know what the top end is? And so they get that slobby belly like a northern pike, but they're hyper aggressive like a muskie. And so there's just a few people. Some French guys have done it. If you look them up, you'll see, just oddball here and there, you know, Mongolian outfitters. It's like the same part of the world where those taimen fish are. And no one's really sort of scratched the surface of how big these things get, because nobody really knows. But it's kind of bizarre. So that's the thing. What I'll tell you is I was looking at doing it, but then the whole funsy thing happened with a certain pandemic that squashed it. And then we're followed up by that geopolitical situation going on in Ukraine, which makes it a little dicey to be over there. You know, so you can't do the Russian thing, running over to Mongolia when things are a little bit different, you know what I'm saying?
But tough trip to book.
And then there's some freaking Donkey Kongs, and I've seen, as far as guys that are targeting these fish, and I'll say it flat out. So like Tim, my buddy from the Netherlands, and you know, you look at the way they fish, and they're not... Those pike guys are not musky guys, right? They're just not. They do similar things, but they all love swim. Like, Europe is swim baits. Their favorite baits are swim baits times a million, right? And then they'll mix in some other stuff and some dive and rise and glide baits. That's the Euro way of approaching it. When I was in Budapest, I had a guy that owns a store. He's never seen a bucktail, Jay. Literally has never physically... He's seen them in videos. They don't even have a bucktail half these places. So what these guys are doing to target these fish is wholly removed from what we're doing. You know, so that's kind of the neat thing. I know it's not a muskie, but if they can get bigger than a muskie, I'm pretty interested. And like I said, that would be kind of the only thing I want to do that I've yet to do, because there's not a lot of hard data and there's not a lot of there's just simply not enough catch data to know. There just isn't. They call them black spotted pike, but it's a weird looking fish, man. And like I said, it's right there in the family, has the same habits. I can't even find the MFOJ if they'll figure eight. You know, a pike won't figure eight. Nobody really knows. Nobody knows on these fish, because half those Euro guys, guess what they don't do? Like Tim came from the Netherlands, and, you know, he's big time pike fisherman over there. His brothers are big into pike. They've caught massive pike. They've got 50-inch pike. You know, and Tim needed a little help on his figure eights. He's been doing this for freaking 30 years, and then figure eight's a completely new thing because it just doesn't play on those big pike.
Just not a part of the game plan.
It's
over
not
there.
None. You get the bait in, and you know, you kind of swish it around, hoping he's hitting. If he's looking at you, if he doesn't hit, you just chuck that sucker back out there and do it again. So there's a lot to be learned about that fish. It's a completely kind of under targeted and completely not understood. It is probably the furthest thing from a fish that people know anything about. So there's that, you know. And you'll get, I've seen fish, again, you're dealing with photos coming out of Russia, and you're dealing with Google Translates and just whatever, of people claiming fish well above 60. Now, I don't know the validity of that, you know, or who knows, yet again, you know, but that's the word on the street, that they can get to just absolute gargantuan size. And I've seen a few pictures where I go, unless that guy's, you know, Peter Dinklage, that's a pretty good dang fish, you know. So that's my spot. Jay, what part of plover do you want to go to? What's your thing you've not done?
Oh, the river system down there. Boom, the Wisconsin boom, River flows right through the
lake.
Just a little north of there. But
no,
yeah.
Is there any place you ever want to fish that you just haven't? What's your musky, or hell, Wobbegoon. Wobbegoon? Well, yeah. I know somebody that does it. He's tried to get you there, but come on. We'll work on that. More on that later. We're trying to get Jay off the government watch list so he can get across the government or across the border.
Schedule out the summer.
We're working on it. Anyway, that's a tangent, but if you've never heard of that fish, I'm sure somebody's going to Google it and go, what the heck? But it's just kind of neat. It's just a different thing. And I didn't, for all my years of being deeply entrenched in musky fishing, I didn't know about this until seven, eight years. Which is crazy. You know, you just don't see a lot. The way I came across this, there were some writings of mine and Joe Bucher's that were stolen and translated into Russian, by the way. So people had grabbed articles and are translating them into Russian and foreign language on sort of how to do this stuff. So whatever. Yeah, that would be it. So sorry, long tangent. It ain't a muskie, but it's close enough. Lee. My son and I will be going to Lake of the Woods near Angle Inlet in late July. Our first muskie trip up north. Any recommendation or techniques, lures, colors will be appreciated. Just turned on the podcast. Really enjoy them. Thank you, Lee. We enjoy that you enjoy us, and we enjoy enjoying you enjoy us. Correct, Jay?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Enjoy. Lake of the Woods.
July.
There I was. Lake of the Woods. I was down to my last pair of pants. I would say the prerequisites on Lake of the Woods are going to be good functioning blades, right? So I want to have good blades. I prefer, say, like a Spanky or a heavier, you know, that IC, whatever it is, the IC ICUP or what's the new bucktail from Frenzy J?
IC7 is the new one. That's a smaller one.
Yep. Okay, not the ICUP. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so the IC7, I just couldn't remember what it was. That's done well there. I've done very well with Booker on 700s. Now, a sleeper bait there is going to be blacked out Bigfoot Mag Booker tail, which pulls like you're pulling a, you know, have you ever seen that squirrel on a jet ski, Jay, in the video? It's like you're pulling him and all his friends, right? The one of the hardest pulling blades there is the Bigfoot Booker because it's got fluted tins.
Yeah.
Very right. Well on that. I like Spankies on like the woods, but I like that freaking Mag Booker slow rolling that. And it's like, ah, my wrist. And you get gunked on it. Color wise, what you need to look at is Lake of the Woods definitely is tannic in a lot of places, right? It's got a lot of color to it. So we want to be aware of baits that have a good profile and they're not going to blend in, you know? I mean, we want to have our blacks, our oranges, classic stuff, crankbaits with white bellies, orange, right? Things that have a hard profile as well as things with big flash. So, you know, your silver on silvers or maybe like white marabou meps in an 8. I want to have that game down. So obviously you're taking blades. Lake of the Woods always produces topwater fish, and I got a ton of messages from people this year, and they just heard great feedback about Titans there. I'm not shilling for Titans, but the natural perch, which is the yellow sides with a white belly, and it's the white belly that's doing on that lake. The Titan big one has done very well there recently. Joe Booker made a legendary career by throwing top raiders on that lake, right? And there's some lakes. I had a discussion this week. Well, on this lake, they like fat bastards, and on this lake, they like this. It's undeniable a top raider works on Lake of the Woods. Been there, done that, got the t-shirt. Booker's made a living out of it. So top raider, Titan, a good assortment of blades in various sizes, right? So have our dark stuff for dark days, our light stuff for light days. You know, Canada, I don't think I've ever seen black and orange not work, right? I've never seen hues of that nature not work, whites and your silver. So having that down, something that's a sleeper, I'd say technique-wise, that doesn't get utilized enough are shallow bulldogs and shallow running rubber. Okay? So it's funny, back to Booker. I was filming up there with him. I kind of fashioned this Booker prototype forever ago. It's more of a jerkbait, which is I'm emulating what I'm doing with, say, a shallow bulldog over the weeds on Eagle, and that technique plays. So I've always done really well with like a Cisco bulldog or just a the black orange, you know, people call it ball liquor or whatever. You got your black orange bulldog for the evening or like a Cisco, something that's got a good profile. So a shallow large rubber presentation over some of these shallow weed beds, that's going to be clutch. You want to have that game together. Other trip savers have been glide baits. You get a cold fronty stuff. So your Hellhounds, your Phantoms, whatever, pick a white and a black one and move on with your life. The other thing I'd say that works on the rocks very well in cold fronts, and I've done it with Booker, is that baby depth raider. That's been productive, right?
Sure.
Could you get away with a 22 short or something like that, or a Cisco kid? You could, but I'm going for that baby depth raider straight model. I've ticked and clicked the rocks cast in there and done so well on that. So that's kind of a prereq for me. Like, so shallow rubber, your blades, your top water of choice. Other things I've stolen from Joe and Noe, always done really well with rattle trap castbacks on that lake. Always. So having a lighter rod with a rattle trap ready to fire back, that whatever, pick your poison, whether it's a Bill Lewis or a Joe Booker, always pretty good. And the other castback that seems to be money on that lake is a white Poseidon. So like a 10 or a 12, you pick your poison. Lake of the Woods, you can get some castback fish with regularity. So I'm going to have that secondary setup ready to go. If we're moving them on blades, he doesn't throw a white Poseidon back, right? Burn it in, lickety-splickety fish on end. But that is one of the more cast-backy lakes that I've fished and had experience on. Okay, those fish are somewhat, I mean, there's pressure, but those fish are going to, when they're ready to make a move, they're coming. So cast-back presentations, there would be a couple. Obviously, you need to travel heavy. That's one of my recommendations. Anytime you're going to Canada, right, you're going on that big trip, whatever you think is going to work won't work. It just won't. You're always going to be catching fish on the thing you have the least of, Jay. It's just inevitable.
Yeah.
It's inevitable. You go, all right, these things are hitting rainbow butt monkey, sparkle lime, you know, eerie.
No, you got to be kidding me. That's the one thing I didn't bring.
Yeah, we got two of them. And if you lose one, I'm going to beat you to death. You know, that kind of deal. Seems this the way it is.
Would you say overall July Lake of the Woods, the weather's right, the fish are turned on, they're on the weeds, and vice versa, cold front weeds conditions, they're basically on the rocks. In generality,
yeah, weeds. I mean, it's just so okay. Basic weeds, rocks, weeds, any combination, little cup bays. You know, July, you're not worried about the pea soup algae, which is nice. Basically, every nook and cranny on that lake's going to have a fish in it. If the weather's holding up, you can move through that lake fast, too. Those fish will make pretty good moves. So your proximity on a decent weather day is going to be pretty good. I say that, and I'm trying to think of stuff that's worked. And I'm not saying one fish. I'm talking about I've seen it work a ton. Obviously, Joe's going to throw that the 7-inch shallow rate, or the jointed one. But I've also done really well on, like, the big slammers and stuff off the rocks as well, like for shallow fish. I don't think summer cranks get thrown enough. So I'm going to have that kind of on hand. You obviously want to have you want to have a reasonable assortment of every bait class. But if the weather holds and it's typical July weather, you should be on a relatively shallow bite. You know what I'm saying? So,
yeah,
but be prepared to move off the edges. You go, oh, here it is. He gets up there, big cold front. Well, buddy, you better get that little crankbait out, get way off the edge and slow crank it. You know what I'm saying? Or break out the deeper rubber and get probative on your depth. So regardless of how you shake it out, you're going to need to have a good assortment on hand. That would be just my knee jerk. So like the actual baits or the specific baits I'm not leaving home without for a Lake of the Woods trip. I'm a big advocate too, man. And we'll cover it at some point. Learn to make your own bucktails, right? It's simple. It might seem, when I say it's simple, it probably is simpler for me than it is for somebody that's never done it, but it's not a steep learning curve. And it is absolutely just game-changing when you can travel with a box of parts instead of buying tons of bucktails. So you can make what you need. So you take, say, a production bucktail, and you're doing well on bait X, Y, and Z, and you're latching into fish, and you go, we only got two of these. Well, I've got the parts and pieces on hand to make as many as needed, or at least a reasonable amount, which takes the accumulation of a bunch of beads and extra hooks and wire and a variety of skirts and mm-hmm. having those materials on him. Instead of toting around, you've seen that box a million times, Jay, that Plano Deep.
Sure.
It's crammed to the, you know, it's just jam packed. I don't know how many are in there, but I could make a ton of bucktails what's within that one box, right? And I can fix what I have, and I can augment from what I have on hand. Have that versatility, because you might get on something where you go, buddy, I'll tell you what, you know, your son decides he wants to throw a 500 booker tail, and he starts lighting them up, and you got one in the boat. You know, having some blades on hand and some general skirt collars laying around is super valuable. So you can repair and you can modify. That would be my take. What else, Jay? When guys are coming through the shop, they're like, I'm going to Lake of the Woods. What do you see them buying?
Yeah, blades, bucktails in general are a huge thing because that's the bite they're hoping for.
Yeah,
you know, and when it does happen, it's fun because you got that eternal long figure eight possibility of converting fish after 60 seconds. You know,
yeah.
I mean, we've all seen videos of that stuff happening.
Anything else that people were focused on, thinking like a woodsy.
Well, I mean, I think you're spot on. I mean, it's bucktails and it's rubber and it's topwaters. And those are the three types of baits. But to think outside the box and incorporate dive rise stuff and to incorporate more crankbaits, I think is huge. You know, you've talked about that before, fishing with Joe Booker when you've been up there and he's pulled out tiny baits and he's pulled out, not tiny, but right, I mean, tiny right, yeah. comparatively to, you know, the vast majority of musky bait sizes these days, you know.
Well,
you pull out a baby, yeah. you know, jointed depth raider, and it's like, or one of those little rattle traps, yeah. you know. How many times he's converted on
a billion
follow-ups thrown up to, yeah, it's a tiny bait.
I think his biggest Lake of the Woods fish was on a JB Rattler. I could no text way. Him and ask, but I believe it was on a follow-up, and I was like, okay. I've just seen him do that so many times where I go, okay. Doesn't work great for me on Eagle. Doesn't work great on my other Canadian bodies of water. But on Lake of the Woods, man, it's undeniable. I'm not necessarily over the moon on Eagle having a castback rod on hand, right? I might have, a shallow walleye bulldog laying around, right, on another rod. But I'm not, like, intently just, oh, he came in, he didn't eat, and, like, my next maneuver is to fire back what I had on. Where up on Lake of the Woods, I've seen Joe move them. They come in, they come off the figure eight. He throws that rod down, grabs the other rod, rocket ships, and burns a rattle trap, and they're on. So it's not once, it's not twice, it's not thrice. It is basically an endless lesson in cast back on that lake. So definitely something to consider. Jordan, what is the heaviest walk the dog bait you guys have? Do you think a heavier bait will have a better hookup percentage because it won't blow out as easy? No, I don't. I've heard guys debate that. Here's the deal. Walk the dog is it's not as popular as it once was, right? By any means. I am highly successful on walk the dog topwaters in Canada. Absolutely. Again, I was just saying, I could regale you with days of stories of the fish I've seen on those things get caught and come in. I don't say the Pose Giant jackpot. I'm not real keen on the hooks or the construction of those baits, and they need some love. But that's the best sounding topwater to me, or walk the dog. I've not been a fan of the Weagle, and it's a heavier bait. It doesn't have the sound, this ripping, whoosh, whoosh, like you're ripping the top of the water. And that's what I'm looking for, at least where I fish. It's just very, there's not a lot of options where you go jackpot, Weagle, water moccasin, who else?
Walking Raider.
Not a lot. There's not a
not
lot.
Not a lot.
Because it's just not popular. But my take is going to be that, man, I need a new chair. It's creaking. My take is going to be the jackpot, just because I know the sounds there in most of them. Theoretically, you can have a heavier bait, but the heavier bait's riding lower, so it might be kerchunking and kerplunking, but it's not making the rip sound. There's just fish blowing walk the dog baits out of the water if they come into them heavy, super heavy and hard, is just a part of the game of fishing those. My biggest top water fish ever is on Eagle, and I fortunately this fish engaged. I made just one of those stupid like spool emptying casts, Jay. I just couldn't get weight to get close enough, so I just launched this bait.
Yeah.
And the first time I missed it because he scared me. The second time he knocked it out of the air, and the third time I got him because he was that hot, and I didn't deserve to catch that fish, but I did. And I've had, here's 40s knock that thing up in the air on a jackpot. I increased the hooks on mine to make them ride just a smidge lower, but I'm more worried about that sound. So the heavier the bait, the less it seems to have that rip sound. Maybe you're in a body of water where they just want, say, a weagle, and it bopping back and forth kind of works. But for me, I know there's a trade-off there. I know there is a theoretically diminished hookup rate, but I'm also running the biggest hooks I can get on that bait where I still have the sound. And what I'm saying by the sound, the difference between a good one and a bad one, I don't care what it is a, like, take a boat oar, Jay, and just whack it across, whoosh, like mm-hmm. you're slicing the water. Shoo, 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 shoo. That's the sound I want. Where a good, we want this deep rumbling boop, 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 thing in our prop baits. The sound is the ticket on that, and it's not talked about nearly enough. That rip, get that ripping sound, and I think to achieve that ripping sound, you need something that kind of is lighter that does it. That would be my take. Jay, how many pounds of lead do you put on your Walk the Dogs?
No, never had to do that. Yeah. I mean, and I think you were talking about that earlier, about the difference between weagles. It's like they're almost two different bait classes, you know? When you talk about, there was one used to be made called BS Willie too. I've got some of those, and mm-hmm. that's similar to a weagle, and they ride lower in the water, yeah. and they do that death walk or whatever they call it, yeah. But they're pushing water. They're glook, glook, and it's right. a completely different sound than a snappy little jackpot.
You said they're Luke Duke or glook, glook.
It's called glook. Glook. That's the sound. Look it up.
Look it up. Get your Google out. Glook, glook. Yeah, you nailed it. And I mean, it's almost like the head of the bait is crashing down opposed to the tail of the bait is ripping the surface.
Yeah, yeah, that's
it. And I don't like the head bang topwaters. Bang your head.
No one likes to bang their head when they're fishing. No, Steve, come on.
Well, depends on who you ask. Sam! Just read Next Level Musky Fishing. My head exploded. Thank you. That's the first time I've ever had somebody's brains blow out of their ear, and they thanked us for it. I have one question regarding the book. Could you elaborate on your three-spot bait check and how you establish those three spots? Also, when is the next book coming out? Anxiously awaiting. It's in the works. No rush. This is, books. My publisher said books have a life cycle, Jay.
Sure.
My publicist. Anywho, I got some more grumblings in me. It's called Nexter Level, Jay. Sorry.
Good title.
Nexter Level. Or Look What I Did, Volume 2, Electric Boogaloo. So the three-spot check is something I discuss in the book where I'm explaining that every day when I go out and fish, I'm checking three places, mid, shallow, and deep. The way that you find those is you're going to have to put time on the water and establish places that perennially hold bait under certain conditions. Right? Use structure to find that. What are the structural elements? Are there dominant structures here? And then you're not going to find it day one. It is a culmination where you go, well, if we're high bright sun post frontal, okay, this is where they'll be. But we want to check all three places every day because you don't want to just walk outside. And I've seen it happen. You go, it's low hanging clouds and it looks drizzly. Oh, crap. They're deep. Why? I don't know. But the bait said they were. Instead of guessing. That whole process is allowing the lake to dictate the rules of engagement opposed to your read on the water, which is also super important. So you want to read the water, but you also don't want to force something. So what I have found, and I do it just quickly, and some days I just know better. If I'm on the water day after day after day, I go, okay, nothing's changed, but if I confirm or deny what's happening is similar, I'm good to go. But over a lot of years, I went, okay, when fish are shallow, this is where I can find a ton of bait to sort of confirm or deny that. So work through the process. The process is a searching for bait on your electronics, marking it, and then going, is this a consistent holding area in these conditions? Mm-hmm. And are they somewhere in between? The general, looking at glide baits, what's the difference between the fancy custom stuff and, say, a Hellhound or a Phantom? Jay, what's the difference between custom stuff or a Hellhound or Phantom? What's your take?
In general, they're made out of wood. Phantoms and Hellhound are plastic, solid plastic on the Phantoms, extremely tough. You got a, what would you call that, ABS plastic ABS. On, yep, more of a hollow type ringing tone to it. Still a tough bait. You can't break a Hellhound either, but,
right.
You know, the thing with, like, say, Hottails, mm-hmm. or what's that other brand we brought in?
Lynchum.
Yeah, I seen you catch a very nice fish in front of me on a Lynchum once. Mm-hmm. You like those. They run a little bit deeper. You can you dial down the tempo, and they've got a fantastic roll to them, and they're easy to work, and they generally are a little bit heavier.
Yeah, I mean, well, even in the what I see is I've caught tons of fish on Hellhounds and Phantoms, tons. And with your custom stuff, like Anthony at Hot Tails has been so kind. He's built me stuff just for me. And what I've found, I think I've talked about it before, but what I've found in some of the more boutique stuff is you get shimmy, a little more shimmy on the bait when it's paused, right? Wood tends to do that because the way that a glide bait is weighted, it's weighted towards the rear and sometimes towards the front. So it gets this off kilter thing. And what I want is a bait to, what I want a glide bait to do, what I think is the trigger, is that it rocks off axis when it's paused, right? Warbling when it's falling slightly and it's got a rocking thing or a shimmy to it. I've found that the wooden boutique stuff tends to have that far more often than, say, off the rack Phantom, where I'm sitting here. I don't know what color that is. There's like this one Phantom. I don't know if it's an old wood. When it's got the screw-in components on it, it might be wood or it might be. There's a few different iterations of these baits over the years. And yeah, this one has the thing. It just has the thing. It's here in the bait cave, and I'm saving it for what? I don't know, but it's like probably the best Phantom I have. What differentiates it from the other Phantoms that are identical in size and paint is it's got the thing. The thing is that bait has a triggering looking factor to it or some liveliness to it at rest, right? Opposed to falling flatly, whack, whack, left, right, whack, whack, right, left, and then it just kind of falls and does not much. Some of these custom gliders have that shimmy, that left to right shimmy. The body is rocking off axis is what I'm looking for. That would be my ticket there. Michael, I'm a hillbilly. Well, me too, buddy. Thanks for the question. I'm a hillbilly and I fish off a small John boat with limited space. What is the best net option for a small boat setup? Also, any creaker tips you may have to share are appreciated. Yee, yee. Yee, yee. Jay, best small boat net. What do you think?
Mid-size Stowmaster.
That's what I was going to say.
They fold up.
Yep.
Got a great bag on there. Get the one with the heavy bag. With the heavier bag. I shouldn't say heavy bag.
Why, sir? What a wonderful bag you have.
You are set up for life in that smaller boat setup.
Yeah, you're going to be, when I run my little creaker rig that I stole from Jay, I have one of those Stowmaster nets. That's the only time I use it. It's very convenient, especially if I'm moving around in the boat. You know, you can flip them out open pretty quick. You're going to save some room. So mine kind of fits in between the two metal seats on, like, you know, like, what do you got? Three in most John boats. You got your front, your mid, and your back little metal seats. That net will lay kind of off on the wall of the boat, and it's taking up the least amount of space of any net you could have for a muskie in there. Forest Creeker Tips.
Welcome to this episode of Creeker Tips. I'm Johnny Creeker.
What I would say is always have an anchor. I was talking to some dudes here recently. We were talking about creeking, and you know, they felt like here's a great spot, and they got two casts on it, and now they're downstream from it, right? And a lot of times you're fighting with a little motor or just a troller. If you know something good is coming up, anchor. Drop an anchor and you know, put a cleat on your boat. A lot of these John boats will have a handle in the front, Jay, right?
Yeah.
So you can run your anchor rope through the front handle there, tie a big old stupid knot, and work your way down, right? Save yourself the trouble. So, you know, a lot of times in a drift situation, you know, you've got some highlights or some great structure inside turns, pockets, and holes. I would rather anchor up and get 50 shots at that thing than blow by on two pop shots, right? So having an anchor, I think, is imperative. And the other comment I make on that, obviously we're minimizing weight and we're minimizing space. There's little fold-up anchors, Jay. And it doesn't take a big anchor to stop that. You know the ones I'm talking about where, like, it's like a
I don't know.
I can't remember the proper name for them.
Not a mushroom anchor, but something that has the claws. It'll fold. Yeah,
it's a folding.
It'll just dig.
Yeah, and it's like they sell little ones for like kayaks and all this stuff. So these little, it looks like something like a ninja would throw as a grappling hook, but it collapses on itself.
Okay. Yeah.
One of those is sufficient. You know, you grab bottom with it, and you're good. And you know, or if you're like me when I was a kid, you just take your cinder block, Jay.
Mm-hmm.
Just throw that cinder block out on a rope and have fun hauling him in. But a small collapsible anchor is perfect for that. Dependent on the size of the body of water you're fishing, I've been known to just freaking get to the shore and tie off to a tree as well. Right? Get you a big limb. If it works out, just tie a rope and feed it downstream from a limb. Right, control that drift a little bit more to hit those imperative spots where you go, hey, I'm hitting, you know, work the interstate hole. We better work her good. Well, working it good's not three cast, four cast on a quick drift. So anchoring is super important because a lot of times, you know, in a creeker setup, you don't have spot lock, you know. Hold on, let me carry all three batteries for my 36-volt Minn Kota for my 14-foot John boat. It ain't happening. So getting old school, having an anchor, you know, thinking that way that instead of just blowing through these spots you're blowing by, anchor up and be there. Your collapsible net would be super important. Other things I've always carried when I'm creeking is a lure retriever pole. Personally, I use like a painter's stick with a curly Q. I'll take a paint roller and bend it myself. But having that big extension pole on the boat to get baits back is super important. Also, too, it's good to, if you need to get around a rock or you got some dicey stuff and you don't have the best control, or you need to kind of push pole, right? So having a 10-foot painter stick that extends to 20, you're basically, and I've done this too, I've used them like shallow water anchors. I'll sit in the back of the boat and I got cast and I just put my lure retriever down and drag bottom. And now I've got basically a shallow water anchor if I'm not in super fast stuff. So that tool on hand is pretty useful. Another commentary I make from this, you know, hey, you're coming up on a floating log in your little John boat, having that extension pole and moving debris out of the way. You know, it's kind of like your gondolier stick, your push pole stick, your flat stick, your shallow water anchor. Having that's pretty convenient. So that's kind of like my prereqs, is a folding net, a push pole, and an anchor. And now you can do just about anything you need to do. All right, Jay, one more. Jonathan, how do you know when it's time to switch lakes in the Northwoods? I'm new to the area. I fish some primarily Illinois water. And the amount of water that I'm going to be faced with this summer is kind of daunting. What's one of the best ways I can tell when I should make a change? And what changes should I be making? Love the podcast. Meow, meow. I'll tell you, my philosophy on the Northwood has changed quite a bit. I will dedicate... Man, it sounds stupid. If you're not up there, you wouldn't get it. You know, if you've never fished the Northwoods, it's a pleasure. There's tons of fish. Don't dedicate 3/4 of the day. If it's not happening, it is not happening, right? Dedicate 3-4 hours. If you know you're in a lake, there's a ton of fish, or it's high density, it's a small body of water, 3-4 hours, and I'm out. And what you can do is you can make your changes. The best way to look at is, let's look at water clarity, water color. So if you start on clear water and it's not happening, don't go to another clear lake. Go to a tannic lake, right? If you start on tannic and vice versa. What we like to do and consider sometimes is you might start on tannic and then that's not panning out and you go to clear and they're smacking. Then you go, okay, maybe I've sort of exhausted the few active fish on this small body of water and we go to another clear. So I'm going to let action dictate that. Don't spend all day on something trying to make it happen when you could trailer in 5 minutes away. There's a whole different ecosystem.
Yep.
So look at your water clarity, tannic versus clear versus maybe moderately stained. The other thing I'm going to look at up there is volume of water, right? If you're on a big lake and it's not happening, don't go from Kentuck to Tomahawk and think it's going to be better, right? If it ain't clicking for us, we'll go from, say, a big lake to a small lake. So downsized lakes and change of color, change of water clarity is very helpful. You know, in a cold front, guess where I want to be? Tannic. You know, but in really good, perfect overcast conditions, that's the times I'm going to go focus on those deeper, clearer bodies of water, right? So you have this other tool you can utilize where you can control light penetration by water color. So the tannic fish, if in a cold front, tend to be shallower than the fish that are, say, on one of these big, clear bodies of water, right? I'm not going to tackle something like Trout Lake in a cold front. You know, jokingly, you're talking about Sweeney. I'm going to go to Sweeney before I'm going to frickin' Trout on a monster hunt. You see where I'm going with it? Does that make sense, yeah. Jay? What would your comment be? You've been up there a million years.
Well, one thing you engage on, too, is weed growth, because it differs a ton from year to year. You've seen that in the last few years. You know, just bizarre lack of weeds on certain lakes. Kind of goes hand in hand with knowing the body of water a little bit, or having a little bit of background on it at least. You know, we had a few lakes last year that did not, maybe it was 2 years ago, that cabbage weeds, they're not here. What's going on? Yeah, it's late July. Where are they? And in its place, you know, a different stringy type of weed came up and was overtaking the areas. We're out of here. You know, it's not, I mean, we heard from other people, it wasn't really happening. Went to a different lake and lickety-splickety, 10 minutes away, a trailer, and it's a different kind of situation with clear water and great cabbage weeds.
Cabbage.
And the growth is good, and it's more predictable, judging where and at what depth and what, and
right,
what,
how for the, summer,
you know,
conditions,
the bait fish is staging. Yeah.
Absolutely. Perfect. Well, and Jonathan, what I'd say is get you a... get some lake maps and study up and figure out your water clarity and sort of get you a corral, a little harem of different options, you know?
Yeah.
Do your research and go, okay, what's in my immediate area? Get you too tannic and too clear, maybe some moving water, because I'll tell you what, the rivers up there are way underutilized. You know, so too tannic, too clear, and a little stretch of river that you can get to, and now you got something to play with in any condition. Anyway, Jay Bird. It's been another stirring rendition. Next week, Jay has a huge announcement. Massive.
Do I?
You will. Just a
That's right.
A massive announcement about I don't know what, but he's we'll figure it out. Whatever
he will.
It might be, you know, heck, you might be at court making an arrangement like that poor son of a gun that found. Can you imagine you find a $300 Menards card and now you're brought up on charges?
What would you do?
Listen, you know, it was the card of, what did you say, dumpster destiny?
The dumpster of destiny.
Anyway, JSE is the dumpster of destiny. Say goodnight, folks.
Night.